Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My friends, because today Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike are talking about connective tissue. I'm Dr. Mike Todorovic. This is a different opening than I usually do.
I was wondering if this is a new podcast.
Should I just do the regular one, Matt?
No.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike's Medical Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Todorovic, joined by my co-host.
Connected with Matthew Barton.
Wow. He is my areola connective tissue. Wow, my elastic pal, my reticular friend. Connective tissue is the topic today.
Are you going to call me dense?
Dense irregular is what I would call you. Today we're talking about the topic that many students probably ignore, dislike.
Yeah. Push to the side.
Push to the side. I get it. It's confusing. It's not a super fun topic,
boring.
But we will make it fun, right?
We could try.
Well,
we can only
not with
try.
Those types of pauses, we won't. So I think the best place to begin, Dr. Matthew Barton, is by talking about if I were to pluck every cell off your body one by one.
Off it?
Off it.
What, all the bacteria?
I was just to pluck you apart one by one, one cell at a time, and pile you up. There would be about 30 trillion cells that make up you, Matthew. Mm. Now, if
what a pile it would look like.
I reckon it's similar to what it looks like now, to be honest.
Just a pile of slime.
Big red slimy pile. If I were to then take those cells and then sort them according to just their function broadly, I would have four piles.
Okay, so
and I'm not talking about hemorrhoids here. I'm talking about four separate piles of cells sorted by function, and these are what we call tissues.
Okay.
Right.
And so basically you've got the cluster of cells, tried to understand what they actually do in a similar way, and then we can categorize them in four broad categories.
Yeah, okay. Exactly what I said, yeah. So they're muscle okay. Tissue, so that's for movement.
So that's a huge part of the pile, yep, keep going.
Yeah. Well, for me, maybe, another really big part of the pile for you is epithelium.
Oh, okay.
Yep, so just a bunch of skin. Yeah, so that's two.
Skin and
barrier.
Skin and pipes.
Excuse me?
Skin and pipes.
Okay. Well, let's not.
You know, like the.
Let's not get into
mouth to.
All right.
We've covered that one.
Okay.
But also the lungs.
Yep. So epithelia is just barriers. Then we've got nervous. So that is for communication. And then finally, the last tissue type is that for connective tissue. All the cells that sort of hold you together.
Right.
Right. So that's going to be the focus of today's connective tissue. Now, when we think about connective tissue, they actually have, well, there's no definitive way to talk about their functions. But I like to say there's five functions.
So this is your five categories that you've made yourself?
My five categories. I think that every, if not most, textbooks will concur. Okay. They might only say few of them. I think I actually am more extensive. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm far better than most of the textbooks. Everyone says, why don't you write a textbook? And my answer is because I like living a life. Yeah. No, why would I waste my time? People think that textbooks are a lucrative deal. They ain't.
How would you know? You haven't done one.
We've written chapters of textbooks.
Okay.
It's not a financially smart idea to do. Anyway, so five functions of connective tissue.
Okay.
All right. One.
Here we go.
Okay.
In any particular order?
Yeah. I'll throw it at you and maybe you can think of some ways in which connective tissue does this function.
Oh, okay.
All right. Protects.
All right. You mean give an example of
how connective tissue protects.
Okay. So bone.
All right.
Like the thorax, you've got ribs, sternum that protects your vital organs in there, like your lungs and your heart.
Very good.
Or the skull. The skull is this helmet of bone.
Protecting Matt's walnut-sized brain. So, okay, that's great, bone. So bone is connective tissue and that's one way that it can protect. Brilliant. All right, second function. And obviously this isn't – what we're going through isn't an exhaustive list. So that's not the only way connective tissue protects, right?
Okay.
There's many ways, but these are examples. All right, next is connective tissue supports. So how does it support?
Support. You mean like mechanically support?
It's a wild card, up to you,
how
man.
I want to go with it. Support. Maybe it just kind of puts together the other three tissues that you spoke of. So you have epithelium. Let's say the skin is an example. You have your epithelium, which is the outside, the epidermis.
Yeah.
Under that, if you go further down, you've got muscle.
Yeah.
In some cases. And so you need to link them together. So you need to support the two together by having connective tissue in between them to support those other two to three tissue types.
Sure. That one also sort of feeds into the next one I'm going to say, but you're right.
It's a polite way of saying you're wrong.
Another way is bones again. They support the weight of our body. Okay. Cartilage supports the joints, right? Forces moving through those joints. The support is also like your kidneys, so they need to be supported. Otherwise, they're just going to be free floating throughout the body. So they need to be anchored. Which
they do. They get anchored to the back wall.
Yeah.
On a bed of fat.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, one of the best bed types you can have.
That's right. One of the best beds you'll ever sleep on.
Ceiling posture purity, but you can have a bed of fat. If you lose too much fat, your kidneys don't have that protection or that support and they just move up and down.
That's right. They just float around.
Yeah, floating kidneys, which is actually a thing.
That is a thing. So we've got protects, we've got supports. Third one is binds.
Yes.
Yeah. It wraps stuff up, right?
So maybe around organs, they put capsules on.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Most organs have a protective capsule around it. You see it with the kidneys, the spleen, other various structures. So there's binding. But also you've got like the intestines.
Mesenteries.
Yeah, they're all bound together. It's not like the movies when somebody gets eviscerated and they're pulling their intestines out like a line of sausages. It doesn't work like that. It's just one big heap.
We have to pull hard because we kind of do that in the our first AMP lab, not so much with a human, but with
or not at all with a human.
With a cadaveric rodent.
Yes.
And the students do like pulling it out and making a big long line of intestine just to see how long it is. But that connective tissue puts them into a nice coordinated bundle.
Exactly right. Mm. Beautiful. Coordinated bundle is a great way of describing this podcast. Transports. Connective tissue transports.
Blood.
All right. And what needs to be transported in blood?
Heaps
of stuff in blood.
Yeah. Well, right? I was just trying to think of, is plasma connective tissue? I guess it is, yes.
Yeah.
It's the fluid part. It's the ground substance. Yes. Nutrients, oxygen, cells.
Waste.
Electrolytes.
Yeah, perfect. All right, and finally, last one, is immunity.
Okay, well, that's the immune cells.
Yeah.
And that would be an array of
yeah, very good.
Leukocytes.
Yes, okay, so white blood cells, yeah.
Lymphocytes or the granulocytes and, the ones that coordinate activities with them.
And don't forget lymphatic tissues as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're connective.
So you could also add that to that repair. So after you have injury,
yeah,
the connective tissue is part of the repair process.
Right, that's good. Okay. You're adding six to our list.
Well, maybe you just put that with defense. Did you have defense?
Nope.
What was that one, last one?
Yeah, so we've got seven now.
What was the last one?
Immunity.
Immunity, defense, repair, all together.
Okay, so you're just going to sell it as one thing.
Yeah, I'm going to sell it one
thing. Fair enough. That makes it easier for the students. So we've got five functions: protects, supports, binds, transports, and provides immunity. Now, the reason why connective tissue can do all these extensive roles is because it has three really important properties. These properties include tensile strength, so it can resist like pulling and stretching and tearing. Yeah. It's got elasticity, so it can
bounces back.
Yeah, bounces back. So like when I throw an insult at you, it just bounces straight back to me. So elasticity, you can stretch it, snaps back to its normal shape. Do
we lose that? That's one of the things we lose over time, right? Particularly with the skin.
That's right. And then finally, volume. So this is what people find to be an interesting one, is that connective tissue is actually really important at filling space. So a lot of the time, the space filling material is connective tissue.
Lips, filling that with space, that's the collagen that you add to it.
Yes, and filling it with other things like dermal fillers and so forth, which is probably just predominantly collagen, I assume.
Yeah.
So they're the three properties that sort of allow for all these various functions: tensile strength, elasticity, and volume. Now, next part that we need to have a chat about is the fact that some connective tissues can be really hard, like bone. Some can be semi-solid. Any examples that you can think of semi-solid connective tissue?
Fat.
Right, fat, adipose tissue. Yep, that's, yep. Any others?
Cartilage.
Yeah. I'd say that's semi-solid.
Because that's compressible, but like it takes upon the compressive forces put through our bones. So it's usually, one example, hyaline cartilage is at the end of the long bones and they kind of allow that force that goes through the bones and like a shock absorber.
Yep.
But
that's semi-solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's semi-solid. And then liquid. Liquid
blood.
Blood. So this is where students get confused because, you know, you know what nervous tissue is when you look at it. You know what muscle tissue is when you look at it. But connective tissue seems to be, well, it can be bone, it can be cartilage, it can be fat, it can be this, it can be blood, it can be that. It can be a whole range of things. So then this question that I get asked by students is, what makes a connective tissue? And it's the fact that all connective tissue contains these three things in various quantities and various types, but they all contain these three things: cells, gels, and fibers.
Okay.
So should we start and look at some of the cells of connective tissues?
Let's do it.
All right. There was a big think.
I'm just trying to think. Well, that'll do.
Oh, that'll do?
Yeah. Let's do cells.
All right. So I like to, now, correct me if you like to do it a different way, but I like to think about the cells that are the immature cells of connective tissue. The Barton cells. So the B for Barton. So think of the blasts. And the sites. These are the mature cells. These are the Michael cells of the connective tissue.
Aren't they called the aging cells?
Let's not call them that. We'll call them the mature,
quinescent?
Highly attractive.
Quiescent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which just means kind of retired.
Yeah.
Not too active anymore.
Yeah, sleeping. Which is what I plan on doing when I retire.
Okay.
All right, so we've got the blasts. So this is a suffix. This is the last part of the word. They're the immature building cells. They release the fibers, the gels and fibers.
Yeah, they're doing stuff.
They're the builders, right? And then you got the sites. They're mature. They're sitting around. They're sort of just looking around the area saying, what needs to be fixed? What needs to be changed? What other things do I need to call upon, right?
So they've locked themselves into a space they can't get out of.
Yes. And I think we spoke about that when we spoke about bone.
Yeah.
Right? All right, let's start with the blasts. Some important cell types that are blasts that you need to know for connective tissue. Probably one of the most important is fibroblasts.
Okay, yep.
So fibroblasts are the main immature cell type for many connective tissues. A lot of the
they're the real king of connective tissue.
They are, aren't they?
Yep.
So they make a lot of like the what we call the loose connective tissues, areola, reticula, things like that. And
they can make dermal. All those fibers you spoke about, they pretty much make the lot.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I haven't spoken about any of them, but yeah.
Oh, well, you kind of did at the start when you spoke about collagen and elastin.
Yeah, and I didn't.
I think you did.
I didn't. Okay. You spoke about collagen in the lips, but okay. We will get there. We will get there.
All right.
But they make that. Yeah, you're right. They make those fibers and the gels we're going to talk about shortly. So fibroblasts, super important. They make many types of connective tissues. Osteoblasts.
What's bone. That? Bone.
Yeah, they're the bone builders. Chondroblasts.
Cartilage.
Cartilage builders. Hemocytoblasts.
Oh, blood.
What type? Do you know?
Bone marrow.
Yeah, so both red and white.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, and then you got, and that's not an exhaustive list of the blasts, but they're probably the most common. They fill up most of the connective tissue types. Then you got the mature connective tissue cells. Adipocytes.
Yep.
Which are?
Fat.
Yep. Osteocytes.
Oh, so they're just blasts that have retired.
Yep. So mature bone cells. Chondrocytes.
Yeah, they're the cartilage cells that, again, retired.
Erythrocytes.
Red blood cells.
And leukocytes.
White blood cells.
Yeah. And obviously others, but there we go. They're the cells. Right. So depending on the type of connective tissue depends on the cell. Or I should probably reword that and say the type of cell depends on the type of connective tissue.
Yeah.
Right. So the next thing is the gels. You must have gels.
Are we going to come back to the cells?
Not really. Oh, okay. Unless you want to talk more about
I think we should
them.
Do a little bit.
Okay.
Well, just with the cells, because that's going to kind of dictate what tissue they create.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just said that. Yeah. That's okay.
But just
don't listen to anything I say.
Another way we could kind of do a degree of categorization with these cells is whether they are fixed within the tissue,
right,
or they migrate into the tissue from another area.
Okay.
Okay. So can we really quickly go back
all the way to the beginning, Matt, talk about embryology?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was joking. Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. Really quickly. No?
All right, no,
yes,
go,
please.
No, no,
please.
Do it.
Okay. Well, we all started with a zygote. Do you agree?
You had three goats, I think.
Okay. So sperm, egg together, now we have a single cell zygote. That's where we all began.
Wish that's how
embryo.
Mom and dad told me.
Then we progressively replicated. So that one cell became two and so on, so on, so on. So
all right.
Yep. Transport, because this all began in the fallopian tube, transport a few weeks until we're in the uterus. Let's say at about 3 weeks, we change that cluster of cells into three broad
groupings?
Groupings, yeah.
Yeah.
We have the ectoderm.
Right.
The endoderm.
Yep.
And we have the mesoderm.
Okay.
I'm not going to go too far into this.
Doesn't that just mean outer, middle and inner?
Yep, that's right. Yep. Ectoderm pretty much makes your skin, so your outer wrapping and your central nervous system.
All right.
Okay. All right. The endoderm is just the pipes inside.
All right.
Pretty much the gut.
Ooh.
And the mesoderm is everything else.
Connective
so
tissue.
Does pretty much all the connective tissue that's made comes from the mesoderm.
All right.
Now, at this point, the cells that start to differentiate from the mesoderm is what we call mesenchymal.
Right. Okay. That
so
makes sense.
Mesenchymal stem cell is pretty much all those connective tissue cells that you mentioned come
so like
from this.
So like fibroblasts and osteoblasts and they're all mesenchymal
cells. That's right. They
cells.
They come from that.
All right. Okay.
And there's an important just distinction that we should make here, the difference between a stem cell and a progenitor cell.
Oh, what is it?
Do you know the difference?
I think a stem cell can become anything and a progenitor cell goes down one particular lineage. Or am I totally wrong?
Oh, no, you're pretty much right. A stem cell, though, has the capacity to keep renewing itself.
Right.
Okay, so a good example was the hematopoietic stem cell.
Yep.
So that sits in the bone marrow, okay, but it has the capacity to regenerate itself to stay as a stem cell.
Yes.
But as it goes down a lineage, it becomes a pleuro or a potent cell. So now as it goes down, it can only – so it could have a lymphoblast or a myeloid blast. They can only go down a certain line now. So
limited.
Now it can only become a lymphocyte or a natural killer cell.
Right.
Or the myeloids can become granulocytes or red blood cells. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But they can't renew themselves anymore.
So they're progenitor cells.
Progenitor.
Right.
But the stem cell that sits back in the bone marrow, it it is still a stem cell,
right,
so to speak.
Okay, so at this point, the mesenchymal stem cells now.
So this, the mesenchymal will make the majority of your connective tissue, but right, there's one group that, you know, it's kind of a strange one, but as the embryo's developing, you have this kind of bulgy sac at the front, which they call the
yolk. You've kept, by the look of it.
Yeah, that's right. It's kept the yolk sac. That is making stem cells to produce blood. So in the baby or the very early embryo,
yeah,
that's making the blood cells. So that's right, where the hematopoietic stem cells are.
Okay, okay.
Then as the embryo develops, they migrate into the liver and spleen, and they take over doing the blood cells.
All right.
But as we get closer to being born, they migrate further and then they go into the bones. Uh-huh. And so they become your hematopoietic stem cells. And so now, as an, or as a let's just say an adult.
Yeah.
I was going to say a born human.
Yes. you could. I mean, they're both two words.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the hematopoietic stem cells, so the ones that will make the connective tissues from all the blood-driven yes, products, come from that one population of cells.
Okay. What's the point of this?
Well, it just tells you that's one where it originated from.
Yeah.
And the others, all the other ones you mentioned, are from the mesenchymal stem cells.
All right. So some migrate there and some reside.
So now with the hematopoietic stem cells,
yeah,
they're, at least the stem cells, they are fixed within bone marrow, but as soon as they start to come into a progenitor cell and then become more like their functional outcome, yeah, then they move into the blood, okay? So now they migrate in the blood, moving around the blood, and then when there's potentially an issue, they will move off into the tissue.
When there's an issue, they move off in the tissue.
Right. So,
is that how you get students to remember it?
Besides, like red blood cells, they'll stay in the blood forever okay, until they die, at least. But all the white blood cells, they will move out.
All right.
Does that make sense? So yeah, that they're therefore migrating or migrant connective tissue cells.
Gotcha.
Cool.
That's cool.
But interestingly, if you took up,
no, it'd be good to hear something interesting.
You know, when you did the pile of cells for me.
Yes. Yeah.
About 40% of those cells,
yeah,
somewhere between 40 to 60%, is only one cell type.
Red blood cells?
Yeah. Isn't wow, that amazing? Okay. So your majority of your cells are actually red blood cells.
Red in there for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay.
I thought that was cool.
No, that is cool. That was the most important thing, most interesting thing you said in the past 15 minutes.
So then you have the fixed cells that are actually locked in the tissue. They can't really move out and yeah, around and so forth. That's going to be or the resident cells, that's going to be the ones you mentioned, like the blasts.
Right.
But they still come from the mesenchymal cells and that still gives them a capacity to regenerate that population.
Yes.
And that's where all the, I don't know if this is a safe thing to say, the quackery with stem cell therapies,
yeah, yeah,
where they're injecting mesenchymal stem cells into your blood and they're like, it will go to the right location and regenerate your cartilage or your ligaments or whatever.
It doesn't work like that.
There's good research being done to say if you were to take a mesenchymal stem cell and put it into, say, a degenerative joint, whether that has capacity, but just to throw it into your blood and think it will go yeah, miraculously into that area to regenerate it.
Yeah, it's
questionable.
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay. Well, welcome back, everybody.
I thought that was all right.
It was good. Yeah, look, it's my job to hang crap on you, Matt.
Sure but, do. That's harsh.
No, well, it feels good. It feels good to do it. All right. So done with cells?
I'm done. I'll just leave the room.
No. I need you to be here because otherwise I'll be talking to a wall.
Expand it.
It's probably no different.
A wall of osteoblasts.
All right. Cells, gels, and fibers. We just did the cells.
We did cells.
Yep. Gels. So in actual fact, they're not called gels. They're called ground substance.
Okay.
And basically, it creates the fluid-rich environment that all the components of the connective tissue sit within.
Bathe.
Yeah, that's right. So all the cells, all the fibers, all the other chemicals are sitting within the gels or the ground substance. And in actual fact, the ground substance is made up of four major things. Water is a big one. Gags, right? Which
glossopharyngeal nerve.
No.
Oh.
No, nor is it. Anyway, it's glycosaminoglycans.
I'm glad you said that.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll stick with gags, yeah. Yep. I can see why you did that.
Yep. Proteoglycans and glycoproteins. Now, does it annoy
why
you?
Why those two? Yeah. Why don't they reverse?
Like, isn't it frustrating?
Does that mean just the amount? One's got more sugar on a protein and the other one's more protein on sugar?
Yeah, man, that's pretty much it. So,
thanks, dude.
Proteo. Proteoglycans, proteins with sugars, glycoproteins, sugars with proteins, right? It's stupid, but they're very similar, but I'll tell you the differences in a sec, right? All right, so water, glycosaminoglycans or GAGs, proteoglycans and glycoproteins. So let's first start, well, we know what water is, so we don't have to worry about that. Let's first start with the GAGs,
okay,
the glycosaminoglycans. So these are these long unbranched chains of complex carbohydrates, so they're carbs, and they're found in all the different...
Like cartilage?
Yeah. Well, they're found in all the different connective tissues.
Is this like glucosamine?
Yes. So if you think about the different types of GAGs, right, you've got the chondroitin sulfate, mm-hmm. heparin sulfate, keratin sulfate, hyaluronic acid. So they're all different types of glycosaminoglycans.
Okay.
They all slightly perform different functions depending on where they are. So like for example, hyaluronic acid is in joints, plays a really important role as like a shock absorber and lubricant, all right? Now, I want you to have a think of the proteoglycans now. The proteoglycans are basically always attached to the GAGs. So the GAGs and proteoglycans together, and the proteoglycans allow for like the glycosaminoglycans to really absorb water, to hold onto water.
Okay.
So it plays a really important role in the connective tissue to bulk it up. And obviously in cartilage, it's very important when it comes to providing that bulk for shock absorption and so forth. Mm. But it also just maintains like the integrity of the joint as well. The integrity of that connective tissue. Then when you look at something like a glycoprotein, it doesn't really attach to GAGs, but it has an example of a glycoprotein is fibronectin and laminin, right? And they form cross-linking in the ground substance.
Okay.
Also known as the extracellular matrix.
Well, actually, the extracellular matrix is the ground substance and the fibers together, and right?
Yeah, that's right. And so,
I was going to say that earlier then, but I knew you'd criticize me.
Because I hadn't spoken about the fibers yet.
Yeah. Correct.
So the glycoproteins, they play an important role in cell signaling, regulating cell behavior and tissue repair as well. They also act as cell adhesion molecules. Mm. They promote cell-to-cell interaction and they maintain integrity. So at the end of the day, the way I think about it is that glycosaminoglycans and proteoglycans are bound together. The different types of each is dependent on the different connective tissue type and they all play a slightly different role, but at the end of the day, they mostly play an important role in just pulling water in towards that tissue.
Okay.
That's important. They play other roles, but that's really important. The glycoproteins, like the fibronectin and laminin, they play an extensive role. Like I just said, cell signaling, behavior, cell adhesion, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so these are the major constituents of the ground substance. Does that make sense?
It does.
All right. Then finally, we've got the fibers. Now, like you said, the ground substance plus the fibers is the extracellular matrix.
Yeah, yeah.
It's basically the whole thing that everything's embedded in. So when we have a look at the fibers, what are the three fiber types?
My guess would be collagen.
Yep.
Do I have to say anything more?
No, we'll go through them all.
Collagen, elastin, and reticular fibers.
Perfect. Let's start with collagen fibers. Before I describe what it looks like, you're a vegetarian, so you don't eat steak.
There's different.
So that's just ruined my example here.
Keep going. I've eaten steak before.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay, so when you eat a steak and you get that real chewy part, it's real white and glossy, and you chew, 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 and you just can't break it down.
Mm.
That's collagen. Collagen is tough. Collagen is strong. Collagen provides that tensile strength within connective tissue. As a fiber, it's like a metal rod that's placed within the tissue, providing that strength. You compare that to like elastic fibers, which is like a rubber band. You put that into tissue, it just makes it stretchy so that it can snap back.
Right.
Very different to the collagen.
Yep.
And then the reticular fibers, they look like feathers, so they provide like networks Mm-hmm. Right. And so the type of tissue that they're in are tissues that require a very sort of mesh-like, network-like structure, like lymphatic tissue,
right,
for example.
Like the spleen.
Like the spleen. Perfect. That's filled with reticular fibers. So collagen for strength, elastin for stretch, and reticular fibers for mesh-like networks to be able to hold and wrap things together, which sort of describes connective tissue perfectly.
Right.
So depending on the connective tissue, like if you've got something like bone, you're probably going to have a lot of collagen fibers embedded within it. If you've got something like spleen, you're going to have a lot of reticular fibers. If you've got like a stretchy artery, the wall of the artery, the connective tissue wall, it's going to have huge amounts of elastic tissue embedded in it. Now, you take that into consideration with the differences in extracellular matrix and ground substance and then the different cells, and now you can sort of see why it's all so variable, going from bone to cartilage to blood to whatever it may be.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
All right. So when I put it all together, the analogy I use with my students is like making jelly. You got that aeroplane jelly mix. Do they have aeroplane jelly in other countries?
Yeah.
Can you sing the song, the aeroplane jelly theme song?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I like aeroplane jelly, aeroplane jelly for me.
I like it for dinner. I like it for tea. A little each day is a good recipe.
So, yeah.
I'm not sure that's true though.
No, it sounds pretty.
Is that just collagen?
The jelly?
Yeah.
I don't know what it's made out of, but let's just say it's not
gelatin.
Right? So it's made out of gelatin, but we know what jelly's like, right? Really wobbly, really unstable. But if I were to take some little metal rods and place it in the jelly, it would make it more solid, right? Or if I was to put more elastic, like rubber bands or whatever, what's another name for rubber bands? Elastic bands. Chuck them in the jelly, it's going to allow for it to really stretch and move and be able to snap back. Or if I were to put feathers in it, again, it's creating this mesh-like network.
What would the feathers do?
Create a mesh-like network inside of it. All right, the analogy falls short once I hit that, but you get the picture that I'm trying to make, right? Hopefully, maybe you don't. So that's how connective tissue, that's sort of like the histology of connective tissues.
Yeah.
Cells, gels, fibers. Finally, we need to talk about categorizing connective tissue.
So basically, we've set it up now that we've first spoken about the different functions of connective tissue.
Yep.
Then we've said what are the components.
Yep.
And now by changing the components in percentage wise, it will then cause an outcome that will then provide us with how we then categorize connective tissue.
Yeah. So the tissue types, the connective tissue types.
Right.
Do you want me to start broad and then go more specific?
Yeah.
All right. There's three main types of connective tissue. You've got connective tissue proper, supporting connective tissue, and then fluid connective tissue.
Okay.
So connective tissue proper. The way I like to think about it is this is the proper connective tissue. When you think of connective tissue of the body, this is the connective tissue you're thinking about. The stuff that anchors the organs of the body, the stuff that sticks the skin down to more deeper layers of the body, this is the connective tissue that you think of.
Okay.
Right?
Then what was the second one?
Supporting connective tissue. This supports the body.
So how does this not fit into the proper one then?
Well, I don't think of bone and cartilage as connective tissue.
Oh, okay. Maybe we could call this special then.
Yeah, or supporting, like I said.
No, I like special because it sounds like it sits outside.
All right. We can say that. We'll say special slash supporting. So that's going to be bone and cartilage. And then you've got fluid, which is
blood.
Right. So let's start with the connective tissue proper. So there's actually, fortunately for us, or unfortunately for the students, two subcategories here. Under connective tissue proper, you've got dense connective tissue and loose connective tissue.
Right. That makes sense.
Okay, in what way?
What, that category?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, dense to me would kind of indicate that probably the fibres are jam-packed together in bundles.
All of it, really.
Yeah.
Or everything's jam-packed, okay. Even cells.
Okay. Whereas loose is loosely arranged.
Loosey-goosey.
Yeah, yeah. But not to the extent where it's fluid.
Yes, perfect. That's exactly right. Exactly right. So dense, everything's densely packed. Loose, things are loosely packed. Now, under dense connective tissue, you've got dense regular, dense irregular, and elastic. So dense regular is obviously everything's densely packed, but the fibers are regularly arranged. Yeah. So all like parallel to one another, okay. Like all facing in the one direction. What would that mean if you got connective tissue with all the fibers in the one direction?
They'll probably provide some kind of integrity, some kind of support in the direction that they're running. So preventing a structure getting pulled apart in that one directional manner.
Yeah, perfect. So like ligaments and tendons. Yeah. They will generally cross joints, for example, and they tend to be pulled in only one particular direction.
And that's like the tendons in the direction of the muscles pull in?
Yeah.
If it's ligaments, they're bone to bone. So the weak range of motion, but the way the joint moves, probably in the weakest position it can be in, you put these ligaments to give it greater support.
Yeah. Ligaments and tendons, that's a type of dense regular connective tissue.
Also the fascia, right? Fascia aponeurosis.
Yep. Yes, yes.
Which maybe not as dense as ligaments and tendons, but still.
Yeah, I think fascia is loose connective tissue.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm quite sure fascia is loose connective tissue. Then you've got dense irregular. So this is where the fibers are irregularly orientated. So it sort of looks like they're just arranged randomly. Why would that be the case?
I would imagine then the mechanical depressions or the forces are going in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah.
So like, maybe under the skin?
Yeah, dermis. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. So obviously that's going to receive forces from multiple angles, so the dermis. And then finally, under dense connective, which again sits under connective tissue proper, is elastic connective tissue. So these are like the walls of our arteries.
Okay.
So left side of the heart contracts, pushes blood out, stretches those arteries. They need to be able to snap back to give us that diastolic blood value, and that's elastic tissue.
Okay. Right. So that's its own category.
It's its own category, yeah. Right. But okay. It sits under dense connective tissue because it's densely packed. Then we've got loose connective tissue, still under the connective tissue proper. This is three categories. Adipose, which is?
Fat.
Yep. Areola, which is sort of like the connective tissue that.
So would you say with adipose, it's the one of the only examples where the fluid or the ground substance is actually in the cell instead of outside it?
Oh.
Because you'd say.
Wow. I never even thought about that.
Because you'd say.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of connective tissue.
Yeah.
The ground substance. No, actually, well, let's just call.
Is it inside or is it outside?
That's inside. So that's the.
Never even thought about
that's
that.
That's the lipid droplet.
Yeah, but is that the ground substance?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. I never thought about it. Because
if you look at adipocyte, it's a big round globule or fat.
Yeah.
And if you looked at
metabolically active.
If you look at it histologically, it looks like it has a ring around it. That's the cytoplasm, and it will have the nucleus, which you can see histologically, but all the middle looks empty.
Wow.
And so that's just the fat.
Didn't even think about that. That's awesome to think about. Good point. Next is areola. So areola is the connective tissue of the deep structures of the body. It's the one that like supports and binds and holds all the mainly gastrointestinal viscera together, but obviously other structures. But it's supporting and binding and holding the deeper structures. Then you've got reticular. And this forms, remember the reticular fibers are like sort of feathers, forming a mesh-like network, plays an important role in like filtration, for example. Think of the lymphatic tissue like the spleen. Mm-hmm. That's going to be reticular. So those three, adipose, areola, and reticular, they're loose connective tissue, again, sitting under connective tissue proper. Then finally, well, not finally, but the second one is the special connective tissue or the support.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bone and cartilage. Bone is bone. We know what bone is. We've done a whole episode on bone or multiple.
But interestingly with bone, yes, like you were saying earlier when you were talking about the rods in it, and I may have said this when we did the bone, but when you create cement, okay, so if you want to lay down a concrete path, if you were to just...
It's not a euphemism, is it?
I don't think so. Right. If you were just to put the concrete down and nothing else,
yeah,
it would have strength in its compressile manner,
yeah,
but it would be very weak in, I'm not sure what that plane of movement is.
Yeah, it's good for a podcast. At least this is going to be up like on the YouTube channel.
If you were, yeah, that's right. If you were walking on it or if you put something heavy on top of the path,
it would break
because it's not strong in that particular.
So vertical forces.
Yeah, I guess so. Yes.
Yeah.
So what they add to the concrete path is steel rods.
Right.
And that gives it that strength in that plane.
Like putting the collagen into the bone.
Right. So that's kind of where I was going with it. With bone, the osteoblasts lay down the collagen fibers and then it becomes calcified with calcium and phosphate, which, what's that term called? Got a mind blank.
Calcified.
Yeah, just that term though. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're just adding a salt to it, which then gives it a different degree of strength.
Yeah.
Okay, and that then provides its structural integrity.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Whereas the other one, what was the other one?
Cartilage.
Which then is interesting because then, like, again, don't roll your eyes, but if you look at bones before they're made, they were cartilage before bones mostly, right?
Like but they're like a cartilage precursor too, right?
Right.
It's not like our current cartilage.
No, but there was like the bone.
When we were children.
Yeah. So there were chondrocytes and then that osteoblast migrated and changed the form, the ground substance into more bone-like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and that kind of allows our bones to lengthen.
Yeah.
Still gave the cartilage plate to stay open, which allows it to grow.
Mm.
And then eventually that ossifies itself to then close off.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that kind of has its own kind of differentiation or change between these two specialized groups.
Yeah.
So with the cartilage,
yes.
Then we have further groups, right?
Three.
So we have the hyaline.
Yeah, hyaline.
And that's end of the bones.
Yeah, very glossy, very shiny, very smooth.
Providing
articulating surfaces.
Friction-free movement.
Yeah, knee, hip, shoulder, any joint, any like synovial joint.
But then you have additional, then you have additional hyaline cartilage that's
fibrocartilage.
The meniscus, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll then go to fibrous cartilage.
Then. Yeah. Yeah. So fibrocartilage is like the meniscus of the knee for compressive resistance.
So that just increases forces. the congruency of the joint.
Yeah.
Because it's a fairly unstable joint.
Yeah.
Until you put the meniscus in.
Yes, that's right. And you get fibrocartilage in the vertebrae as well.
Okay. And between your pubis?
Yes.
Or pubi?
Yep. Yep.
Right.
That's right.
What about your epiglottis?
That's going to be elastic.
Oh, is it?
Elastic cartilage.
So that's a third.
That's the third type.
Ear
and epiglottis.
Nose?
Yeah, a bit in the nose, but mainly epiglottis and ear. That's the elastic cartilage.
Okay.
Yeah. And then finally, fluid connective tissue. And that's blood.
Which is blood.
Yeah. So it obviously has very few fibers in it. Otherwise, the more fibers – and the more glycosamine and glycans.
That's a clot and then you're going to have some problems.
That's true actually because obviously the types of fibers that we have in blood are going to be those that help with clotting.
Which will be inactive most of the time.
But it solidifies it,
fibrinogen.
Right? It solidifies it, hence the clot. Mm. Fibrinogen, these are all fibers that play a role in the connective tissue fibers. Mm. But they clot things up.
Mm.
So that's, you know.
And platelets, which is an important cell for kind of modulating or initiating that clot.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But
yes,
how are we going for time?
No, we're good. We're good.
Okay, because there's a cell that I briefly want to talk about.
Mm.
I know we're going back to to cells, but I think this brings in an important clinic.
Do we have to go back through sperm meeting the egg and everything again?
No, we'll skip that. Right. What's one of the most abundant, I guess you'd say it is kind of a migrant cell but then becomes a resident? It's found everywhere in your connective tissue.
Macrophage?
Bar central nervous system.
Macrophages?
Close.
Neutrophils?
No. I think they only come out when there's really some serious issues. But
what? What is it?
What's this function that you're talking about here with macrophages and
immune? Okay. Eaters.
Yep. So what initiates an immune response in the connective tissue?
Well, a couple of cells. Mast cells.
Mast cells. That's it.
Ah, okay.
So the mast cell.
Yeah.
The mast cells are the connective tissue immune cells. Right. So they sit in the connective tissue.
Yes.
And when there's any kind of trauma, anything from mechanical injury, physical injury, chemical injury, thermal injury, they will be activated.
Right.
And they are an immune cell that has granules inside them and they vomit them out technically they degranulate.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but
which is pooping.
Pooping or vomiting everywhere.
Yeah. And do they pass out after that?
I don't know. I don't know. I think they stay alive.
Okay.
But good question. Oh, yeah, having this go at me. Very good. So by doing so, then they bring in those other immune cells in it. But the reason why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah, we're all asking.
Some quite significant clinical issues go wrong when these cells are overzealot, let's say.
Right. And is this just hay fever?
Could be hay fever because that's going to be – what's hay fever?
Well, isn't that –
is that just a cluster of symptoms? Or is that like is it a condition with multiple things happening?
Yeah, I suppose it is. So I always just think about it as like a hypersensitivity reaction.
It is. But when you say hay fever, what are the symptoms?
Well, every time I go to bale some hay at the back in the barn.
Rhinorrhea?
Excuse me?
So your nose runs?
Pretty sure I went to school with
that. Rhinoritis. Rhinoitis.
Rhinitis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know your nose runs or it gets inflamed, yes.
Yeah.
Eyes?
Yeah, watering.
Anything else?
Closed maybe up sinus. Airways?
Maybe sinuses. Yeah, and then it goes down to the lungs. Yeah. So hay fever, yes, but also atopic asthma, so allergic-based asthma. Right.
Which is a hypersensitivity risk.
That's right, yep.
But one or two, do you remember?
It's one. Okay. But you can go further and make it whole body.
Oh.
And then that's anaphylaxis.
Boy, okay.
So the way that this works is essentially your...
Wait, so anaphylaxis is a connective tissue dysfunction?
Well, yes, because it's from a connective tissue cell.
Yeah, interesting. Okay,
so essentially, can I really just say... really quickly how it happens.
Thanks, everyone. Go.
Are we doing anaphylaxis or an allergy?
No, I want you to just say what you were going to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pick an allergen that you want to get allergic to.
Oh, peanut butter protein.
Okay, we'll just say peanuts. Right. So you ingest it for the first time. Your body sees it as foreign. So it sees there's something going on with this we need to deal with. Well, actually, it's probably your macrophages, which is also an immune cell. A connective tissue cell, if we're going to be technical, right?
Hence why I said macrophages earlier.
So they gobble it up.
Yeah.
They can't get rid of it in a way that a person who doesn't have an allergy to peanuts would. They see it as, oh, there's something wrong with this peanut protein. I'm going to present it. Mm. I'm going to break it up but then present it on the outside.
On the surface.
Okay, and along comes a T helper cell. Also a connective tissue cell.
Yes.
So this is a lymphocyte, but it's specifically a T, which matured in the thymus, kind of the top of your neck. No, bottom of your neck.
Yeah.
It communicated with are you looking at your watch?
No.
Communicated with your macrophage and then said, hey, we should probably build up an antibody against this foreign thing, which is the peanut.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
B cell, come along, please, because I needed you to make some antigens, antibodies for me.
Copy itself over and over and over.
So
plasma cells, antibodies.
Clones it, makes it into a plasma cell, pumps out the antibody. This antibody is an IgE-based antibody.
Right, so we've got an army now trained to fight this protein.
Right, but these antibodies, which are IgE-typed, will get flooded into the body, but they bind to mast cells.
Right.
Now the mast cell is primed.
Why are they binding to mast cells?
The mast cells have a particular receptor for IgE antibodies.
Okay.
But in this case, it's seen as a foreign agent that you should be, just like a bacteria or a virus
yeah.
that you want to encounter later to kill off quickly. But in this case, it sees a peanut protein as that foreign thing.
Okay.
So now it's primed. So now the second exposure comes.
Ooh, so first exposure, you're all good.
Probably.
Yeah, second exposure though.
Now it's going to be problematic. So now you're exposed
calling
to it.
Calling the army.
Now every mast cell that gets exposed to a peanut protein.
Poops out its chemicals.
Will vomit everywhere, histamine and.
Huge amounts of vasodilation.
Now you basically say where all the connective tissue that mast cells are located. Around blood vessels.
Yeah, getting
around fine. Your bronchioles, around your lips and nose and around your gut. And they all cause a response. So in your
inflammatory response.
Inflammatory response. So yeah. Your bronchioles will close up.
Yeah.
Can't breathe. Your blood vessels will dilate.
Yeah.
So
blood pressure drops.
Blood pressure goes
through the floor.
Through the floor, not through the roof. No.
None of your organs get fed because of that.
Your guts feel like they're spasming because they're all contracting. The skin gets hives because all the blood vessels are dilating your skin, so you get rashes.
Yep.
Tongue swells up, so this is now an anaphylactic response.
You can die pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this could be anything. It doesn't have to be just peanuts, it could be bee stings.
Yep.
It could be penicillin.
So anaphylaxis is a connective tissue disease.
Yeah, you like that?
I like that. No, that was a good way.
Was it worth the time? That's what I want to ask.
That I'm yet to determine. but we do need to finish off there. That is connective tissue. I do want to read some emails though from our listeners.
Yeah, I had one as well, but I don't know if my internet's working. Yes, it is, but all you right. go first.
I'll go first. So we love reading out your emails. We receive a lot of them and we now plan on reading as many of them as possible. So one email I've got here from Dean. All right, Dean. Hi, guys. Really enjoy your show. I'm a registered nurse working in Perth. That's the other side of the country that we live in. A few episodes ago, I believe it was the episode related to blood pressure, there was a reference to diastolic blood pressure and a brief mention on what consists of diastolic blood pressure. This got me interested in what makes the diastolic blood pressure what it is. I'm just skipping ahead a little bit. And here it says, my question is, what are the determining factors for the diastolic blood pressure to be what it is? All right. So.
So why do you still have a pressure
yep.
when the heart is relaxing? Like yep. why doesn't it just drop to zero?
Because of the elastic recoil of our arteries.
Where do you get elastic from?
From, my friend, the elastic fibers that the connective tissue or the fibroblasts produce. So remember, it's dense connective tissue and it's elastic. And so when the left-hand side of the heart contracts, it pumps, that's called systole, and it pumps blood out at a pressure of 120 millimeters of mercury worth of pressure, and that stretches those stretchy arteries. Then once the heart relaxes, it snaps back and recoils. That's the definition of an elastic connective tissue.
So like really new underwear.
Like really new underwear, right, which I haven't had for a long time, snaps back and continues to propagate that blood at a particular pressure, generally around about 80 millimeters of mercury worth of pressure. And that's where the diastolic reading comes from.
When you get like the underpants that age over time and then you lose that elasticity, yeah. does that happen with blood vessels or does it do the opposite? They become too
hardened. They become hardened. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that or should I keep going?
No, keep going.
Okay, so that's one factor is the elastic recoil of the arteries. If they become hardened, like you were saying, you get less elastic recoil and therefore you get a widened pulse pressure because if the elastic recoil is reduced, you get less of a continued pushing force for the diastolic value. So you get-
It's harder to push down.
Yeah, so-
And you get a bigger gap.
Gap between the diastolic and the systolic. So that's one factor is the elastic recoil. But the other factor includes what's the blood pressure downstream? So if your organs, if there's a high pressure at some of your downstream organs, the afterload is going to be greater, which means it's harder for the diastolic value. It's harder for the elastic recoil to push that blood.
Is that phenomenon being regulated locally more than systemically?
That's right. So local regulation, and this can happen through, like your muscles receive a huge amount of blood, especially during exercise. But if something happens where certain chemicals are being released and they vasoconstrict the blood vessels at the muscles, the pressure is going to back up. It's going to be harder for the diastolic value to, or the diastolic pressure to push that blood through. So that can be a factor as well. Another factor depends on how hard your heart needs to pump. And so if you're laying down, your systolic value, if that's low, your diastolic value is going to be low as well.
Would also impact, or would this be more systolic, but the viscosity of your blood, like how thick it is? Would that also?
Look, I would say so, because that has to do with like the dynamics of the blood flow going through. So, and that would impact the pressure. Absolutely. Yeah. But at the end of the day, the main thing that causes or alters or is responsible for our diastolic pressure is the elastic recall of our arteries.
Okay.
So that is an email from Dean. Dean, I hope that answered your question. Thank you so much for your email. Matt, do you have an email?
I've got an email from Jasmine.
Yeah.
She said she has just finished listening to our podcast on the cardiovascular system.
Cool.
She's also a nurse, and she was very grateful. She learnt about, from the podcast, why we get postural drop.
Cool.
Okay. And also now the technical, or the technicality of why we have S1, S2.
Lub-dub.
Lub-dub. Yep.
Heart sounds.
So she was very thankful. She said, thank you guys so much. I'm an avid listener now. I really appreciate it. I'll buy you a coffee.
Deal.
Or even put a catheter in if need be.
All right.
She said she'll draw the line with a manual evac. So my guess there is like your constipation.
Yeah, decompacted.
Like an enema.
You know what? I'll take the coffee.
Coffee enema.
Where is this person based?
I don't think it was stated.
Is this Jasmine?
Jasmine.
All right, Jasmine. That coffee sounds good. Matt and I will take you up on that. Final email. I've got an email here from George. George said, hey, Dr. Matt, Dr. Mike, just wanted to give you a huge thanks for the amazing podcast. It got me through my first semester of anatomy, and listening to you guys explain certain topics has put me down this rabbit hole of learning. I love that. That's why we do it, right? I'm glad I found you guys early in my medical endeavor. I'm a professional boxer from Los Angeles. How cool is that?
Be careful.
Yeah, well,
I mean, don't want to offend this listener.
No, George, we love you. We love you a lot. Los Angeles, California, and enjoy relating medical topics you guys discuss about, and particularly when it comes to sport. Question. I was listening to Body Fluids Hydration podcast and was curious on the type of dehydration that occurs when fighters are losing weight. All right. So if you think about this, a fighter needs to make their fight weight. Now they may be, let's just say we're going to go in kilograms because we're Australian. They need to fight at 65 kilograms, but their normal body weight might be 75 kilograms. So,
oh, right. So they got to lose.
They need to lose
15 kgs.
That's right.
Say 75?
Yeah. So 10 kilograms.
Okay.
So they need to lose 10 kilograms, right? Now, the easiest way to lose weight is to lose water. That's the only reason why they do it, is simply to make weight. It's nothing to do with-
You're going to say chop off your leg, but-
They could, but if it's-
Make it difficult.
Difficult to fight, that's for sure.
Move around the ring.
Absolutely. So they lose water weight. Now, they do things like hop in a sauna. They wear like a plastic bag or garbage bag to prevent sweating. Just over, like a sweatsuit.
Okay.
They wear a sweatsuit. They exercise. They do a lot of heat-based training.
So you can't,
sauna.
You can't do diuretics anymore?
No, you can't do diuretics. That's illegal as far as I'm aware in most fighting sports. So the water mass that they're losing is through sweat. And so sweat is, while it's both electrolytes and water, it's mostly water. And at the end of the day, you're going to lose more water than electrolytes. So you're going to have a lot of extracellular fluid loss. And
so a hypotonic contraction.
Hypotonic contraction. That's right. Now that's fine relatively fine in the short term, but you need to rehydrate very quickly and get those electrolytes back in as well. So one of the things they used to do was just go straight back on an IV after, because the weigh-in's usually like 24 hours before the fight, sometimes 48 hours before the fight. And so they'll just get IV and get it all back in. And
That's not illegal?
It is now.
Okay.
Yes, it is now. Because people used to get 15 kilos of fluid shoved back in. And you'd see somebody weigh in and the next day they're 15 kilos heavier. So it's insane. But there you go. George, I hope that answered your question. Thank you for the email. Everyone, please, if you-
And when we're in LA next?
George, if we're in LA, can you-
Pick us up from the airport.
I was going to say, can you organise a sparring match between me and Matt? Dr. Matt versus Dr. Mike, the battle
begins. Do I have to get down to your weight?
It's, you'd need to lose about 80 kilos.
I'll have to wear a plastic bag in the plane.
Yeah, for 8 weeks. Thank you, George, and thank you, everyone, for listening. If you want to send us an email, gubiosciences@gmail.com.
Or go to our website.
Which is drmattanddrmike.com.au, and you can send us an email
brand
from
new.
There. Brand spanking new. Matt, thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Dear listener, thank you.
You connected the dots from this particular topic really well.
Oh, how good. Thank you, Matt. You're just my favourite bit of adipose.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.